like I said before, he spent many years in Romania, working with the orphans in Romania, planting churches. And then a few years ago, him and his wife, while in Romania, I'm sure Edward would share a little bit about this. I'll just introduce you this way, Ed, if you don't mind, because I just love the story myself. I met this one little girl in an orphanage that his wife brought home just for one night. She's still with him, and she brought her two siblings with her as well. They've adopted three beautiful Romanian children, all siblings, and God has put a heart for the hurting in Ed's heart that I haven't seen in many, many people, friends. And I know that we're going to be blessed, and Ed, why don't you just come in to share your heart with us.
Well, you're going to learn more about me as we go, but please turn to Matthew 16 to start. It's great working alongside Kurt. You heard his heart this morning, and he's a man who lives what he speaks. And I've known him for 16 years or so, and I've seen that. Matthew 16 is a familiar verse here, and it's in response to what Peter said. In verse 15, chapter 16, Matthew, verse 15, and Jesus said, but who do you say that I am? And Simon Peter answered, said, Thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God. Now here's a very familiar verse coming up. Verse 17, Jesus answered and said to him, Blessed are you, Simon Barjona, because flesh and blood did not reveal this to you, but my Father who is in heaven. And I also say to you, you are Peter. And upon this rock, I will build my church. And you shall go to it Sunday and Wednesday. Doesn't say that at all, does it? Upon this rock, I will build my church, and the gates of hell shall not prevail against it. And when we look at this verse, some people, and I did a long time ago, I had we think this is a defensive posturing. That somehow this church is surrounded by gates, and hell attacks the gates, but they don't prevail. This is offensive posturing.
Amen. Mm-hmm.
It says here, I will build, it's offensive. I will build my church, and the gates of hell will not prevail against it. See, there are people that are marginalized by society, people that are thrown away by society, and they're surrounded by a gate of hell. They live in hell. Their life is hell. And Jesus said, I will build my church. They will go against the gates of hell, and it won't prevail. It won't prevail against it. It's time to stop going to church. Stop just going to church. It's time to start being the church. Turn to Luke 14, please. I believe Jesus gives us here it was his idea to build the church. It's not ours. And I believe what he gives us here is a perfect description of his view of the church. Of his view of the church any time in history, whether it was the early century or whether it's 2006. Of who would be there, who would be there on a Sunday morning, who would be there any time we meet, who would be sitting in the seats next to us. I believe he outlines it all here. Luke chapter 14, verse 12. And he also went on to say to the one who had invited him, When you give a luncheon or a dinner, do not invite your friends or your brothers or your relatives or your rich neighbors, lest they also invite you in return and repayment come to you. Sometimes we will invite some people into the kingdom of God 20 times before we'll invite somebody else once. Verse 15, but when you give a reception, invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, and the blind. And you will be blessed, since they do not have the means to repay you, for you will be repaid at the resurrection of the righteous. You can add to that list the poor. It expands in our society. It expanded in his society. You could add the orphan. You could add the widow. You could add the homeless. You could add the drug addict. You could add the alcoholic. You could add the sick. Those suffering with AIDS. You could add the mentally ill. You could add the handicapped, those marginalized in our society. And I believe the Lord's view of how His church should operate, who should be there, they should be right among us. Right in the seats among us. I believe His view of the church is this place is to be a refuge. This place is to be a hospital of healing for people that are brokenhearted. The day of saying that's not my ministry is over. The day for a church to say that's not my ministry is over. Other churches are called to that. Every church is called to this.
Yes.
We are all called to walk as Jesus taught us to walk. We are all called to view people the way He viewed people. With the compassion Pastor spoke about. We're called. It's the church's call. And boy, does this world need to see a church like that.
Yes, we do. Yes.
The love flowed out of Jesus for others, and it's to flow out of us. Mm-hmm. There, I've worked in what you call mercy ministries for over 20 years now, whether it be the drug addict or a homeless or alcoholic or the orphan. And what I've seen is there's come to be a disconnect between the local church and mercy ministries. We tend to view it as something that the parachurches do. The Salvation Army does that. Or we tend to view it as something that Catholic Charities do or the government does. I don't know why this disconnect is, I have ideas, but I don't know why this disconnect has fully come to be, but I don't believe it's the Lord's view of His church.
Yes.
That there be this disconnect. Now let me ask you a question. Will the homeless that Kurt spoke about this morning, will they walk in those doors today? Most likely not. We could watch those doors. Will the orphan walk in those doors? Will that lonely widow walk in to visit your church? Will those suffering with AIDS, feeling shame, will they walk in? We could wait here all day long. They are not going to walk in those doors. We have to go get them. And that's what Jesus said in verse 21. And the slave came back and reported this to the master. Then the head of the household became angry and said to his slave, go out at once, church, go out at once into the streets and the lanes of the city and bring in here the poor, the crippled, the blind, and the lame. Verse 23, and the master said to the slave, Go out into the highways and along the hedges and compel them to come in that my house may be filled. We go get them. That's the call. I believe, took the Proverbs chapter 31, I believe the Lord wants to restore His voice to the local church. A voice. And it's right here. Proverbs chapter 31, verse 8 and 9. Speak up for those who cannot speak for themselves, for the rights of all who are destitute. Speak up and judge fairly. Defend the rights of the poor and needy. This needs to again be the voice of the local church. That we are the voice of the... we would speak up for those who cannot speak for themselves. And not just words, but actions. Actions. Proverbs chapter 24, verse 10 through 12. If you falter in times of trouble, how small is your strength? Rescue those being led away to death. Hold back those staggering toward slaughter. This is the call of the church. We are to go into the world, this world. We are to go into the gates of hell and to snatch out those who are staggering toward slaughter. And my friends, they are. I want to speak to you about something very specific today. I want to introduce you to a people in the United Kingdom who are staggering towards slaughter. I have here with me pictures and stories of your future homeless. Your future drug addicts. Your future criminals. Your future mentally ill. These are pictures from UK websites of your foster children. It took me just a few hours to print these. could have printed many more. You have 40 to 50,000 of them here in England. The United States of America has over 500,000 orphans. My friends, I want to speak truthfully to you today. That's okay. We help orphans around the world and we forget our own.
Yes, yes, Lord.
They're out of sight and they're out of mind. Oh, but we know their stories. We read newspapers, we hear it on TV, but generally they're out of sight and out of mind. See, we've done something very clever in the Western world. We did away with our orphan problem a long time ago. We just changed the name. We don't call them orphans anymore, we call them foster children. We changed the name. We don't have orphanages anymore in the United Kingdom, in America, we don't. We changed the name. We do have places we keep our children, we call it foster care. We call it prisons. We call it mental institutions. We call them group homes, we call them boys' homes, we call them girls' homes. There are places we keep our orphan children in the West. I'm a father of three adopted children, three siblings from Romania. I've been involved with working with orphan children on the streets, and we have children's home in Romania for 13 years. I was involved with church planning, Bible teaching over there, working with street children and orphans. This is something I knew about in Romania, but I had no idea what was going on in the West. No idea, in my own country. Until one day I came home, and my wife's mother is, she's been a foster care mother for 20-so years. And we visited her one day, and there was this little boy there, 3 years old. He was physically, mentally, and sexually, physically, mentally, emotionally abused all by the age of three. Now, I worked with orphans in Romania. I saw this little boy. And they had told me that in the last 2 weeks he had been in five foster homes. Nobody could handle him. He bites himself. He pulls out his hair. He tries to rip out his private parts. They can't handle him. They move him to another home. They can't handle him. They move him to another home. He was now with them. He was doing better. Although I looked at this boy and I'll tell you, my daughter, I'll tell you the story, she came out of a mental institution in Romania. This boy looked like he could have come out of that same institution. And it's here in the UK. It's here, it's in the US. It's just hidden. And he was doing better. They said they had to restrain him 24 hours a day from doing harm to himself. But he started doing better in the home. He didn't talk at all. Just made noises. And the social worker said to my mother-in-law, she said, would you adopt this boy? And she said to this social worker, she said, what life could I give to this boy? I'm in my 60s. What life could I give to this three-year-old boy by adopting him? And the social worker responded and said, what life would he have if you don't? And I asked her, I said, what life? I don't know. I don't know the situation in America, but what life would this boy have? And she said, well, he would just bounce around from foster home to foster home until eventually he'd be put in a mental institution, and that's where he'll live out the rest of his life. And that's going on in our countries, my friends. I want to take a candid look at the foster care system. I believe the idea of foster care is a very good concept. Think about it. Listen, I've worked with large institutions. It's not good for children. It's good for them to be in families. It's a good concept. And there are many good homes. There are many good adoptive homes here in the UK. There are many good foster homes. There are many wonderful people who are involved in care for kids. Many Christians are doing it, although they're doing it alone. They tend not to get support from the church. And they feel alone and isolated. And there are wonderful social workers that are involved in the foster care system. I'll tell you, they're wonderful. They sacrifice a lot for little pay because they care for those kids. They need our support. But there's another side. We spoke with a woman who trains, she's trained foster parents. And she told us, She said that she believes, of all the families that she's seen over many years, that over half of the people she's seen are just doing it for the money. What kind of care is a child going to get in a home like that? A child can be moved 5, 10, 15, 20, 25. This is out of one of your newspapers. This child was moved over 40 different times by the time he was 18. I picked this up on the tube one day and I saw the story. Over 40 different times. How will any child blossom being moved that many times? They are homeless children. Oh, we have places we keep them, but they're not homes. There's a lack of stability, a lack of security, and a lack of safety for many of these children. They're in survival mode. And stability, security, and safety are essential to the health of a child, and they don't have it. Siblings are regularly split up in the Western world. God has used us to bring three siblings together that didn't know each other. It was a privilege for us. And it breaks my heart when I read stories like this. I'll tell you, one after another, these siblings are split up right here in England. Split up because there's not enough foster homes to take two children at one time. And it breaks a social worker's heart to have to do it. Now think about how tragic it is for a child, for whatever reason, to be taken away from their parents. Tragic. How devastating it is for that child to be taken away from the only remaining security that child has, their brother and sister. And they're split up. They have to change schools regularly, every time they're moved. They change neighborhoods. They change their friends. So why make friends? I'm just going to change them. Think about the life of an orphan. The life of a British orphan. There's abuse, there's rejection, their self-worth is dashed to the ground. These children right here in your society truly have an identity crisis. They don't know who they are. There's a connection. I want you to hear this. There's a connection because many of you, I can just sense from the discussions this morning, you're interested in social welfare. You're interested in seeing Jesus move and meet the needs of people. You're interested in homelessness. You're interested in mental illness. You're interested in people who are in prisons. There is a connection between the foster care system and homelessness, drugs, sexual abuse, crime, teen pregnancy, mental illness, suicide, runaways. The list can go on. There's a connection, a very real connection. Many foster children engage in self-destructive behaviors. There's an article here I got from the Guardian newspaper. And it says, figures suggest that children in care, foster care, are 12 times more likely to leave school without qualifications, 60 times more likely to end up homeless, and 50 times more likely to end up in prison. Studies I've been looking at recently say that 15 to 30% of children in foster care are going to end up homeless, living on our streets. I was speaking to a friend of mine. I used to work at a homeless shelter in Atlantic City. It's the east coast of America's gambling capital. And we ran a homeless shelter. We saw hundreds of men a night. And he's the director. And I was speaking to him recently about the connection between the foster care system and homelessness. And he said this to me. He said, Ed, we have to stop them from coming down the pipeline. Right. There's a connection. If you want to do something about homelessness, we got to start with the foster care system. Yeah. We got to start with these children. One way or another, church, we're going to deal with them. We're either going to nurture them when they're 3 or 4, or they're going to have a gun to our head when they're 16. One way or another, we're going to deal with them. I believe it's time for us as a church to be proactive rather than reactive in the way we deal with the needs of society, and especially the orphan. If you want to be proactive in dealing with homelessness, let's start before they ever get there. If you want to be proactive in dealing with crime, let's start with that little 4-year-old boy who's lost right now before he ever gets to the point where he'll be a criminal. Let's come up, church, with proactive ideas. It's much better to nurture a child at 3 or 4 than to visit him in prison at 14 and try to convert him. It's much better to nurture a little girl at 3 or 4 than it is to visit her on the streets when she's 18 and tell her about Jesus. Now, I didn't say it's much easier. I said it's much better. Easy is not the issue here. I'll tell you, it's a sacrifice. It'll cost you everything. Things I'm going to talk about are going to cost you everything. But God gives you everything back in return. Right now, state governments are crying out for help. I just have to read your newspaper articles here to realize that social services is crying out for help. Now, let's take a candid look at this. When the British government and social services look into society to see who cares enough to care for these children that nobody wants, do they see the local church? Do they see us? Have we offered any ideas? Have we offered any solutions? Have we said, here we are? The only group in my country and in yours, as I'm learning, that have risen up to care for orphan children are the homosexuals. Now, before we say anything good or bad about that, I do not believe we who do nothing have a right to criticize. When was the last time any of us prayed for the British orphan in our prayer meetings? I have never heard anyone pray for the American orphan in a prayer meeting. I've been in a lot of prayer meetings in America. I've never heard it. They're just out of sight and out of mind to us. You know, we boast that we're pro-life, and that's good. We boast in it. We boast about pro-life. We stand against abortion, but honestly, I don't believe we're pro-life at all. I think we're just pro-birth. Yeah. If we were really pro-life, we would be there for the life of the child. When we say we're pro-life, when we say abortion is wrong, and yet we're not there to take in that child, how do our words have credibility? They have no credibility. When we tell the government abortion is wrong, they say, well, why don't you care for the tens of thousands of kids that are here? Our words have no credibility, my friends. Today's Western church, when it comes to the Western orphan, is irrelevant. It's the plain truth. We have no ideas, no plans, no vision, and no commitment to do anything about it. Individual Christians are. They're doing an extraordinary thing. But I believe it's time for the local church to rise up. I believe this is the day of the local church. I believe God, as Pastor said it when we were back there, your pastor, this is the day God is doing something in local churches. God is saying, it's time, church. It's time that you become relevant. It's time that you take my power and my love and go into society and change it. You're the light of the world. You're a city set on a hill. It's time. It's time that orphan care ministry become a ministry of the local church.
Yes.
The fact is, parachurch ministries can't do it. The government can't do it. The local church can do it.
Amen.
Orphans need families. Where do you find families? Right here. The church itself is a family. This is where we find them. I believe God, you know, this isn't even about us. This is not about us. This is not even about the orphan child. You know what this is about? God revealed this to me one day. It's about Him. He said He's the Father of the fatherless. He said it. It's time to restore His reputation as the Father of the fatherless. How? Through us. Through our hands. Through our hearts. It's His reputation that's at stake. You could tell a 9-year-old little orphan child right here, she's 10 years old. You could tell her all day long, God is your Father. It means nothing. Until a father comes, scoops her up, and says, I will keep you safe, I will keep you secure, you're mine. Then you could say, God is your Father. It will mean something to her. It's time we as a local church begin to provide real and substantial answers for the problems of society.
Yes, Lord.
It's time we as a local church begin to do the unseen things with all our hearts. It's time we begin to do the unglamorous things with all our hearts. It's time we begin to do the hard work of the gospel with all our hearts. Jesus said in Luke Luke chapter 9, 46 through 48. Remember he sat that little child on his lap, said, if you welcome this child, you welcome me. Every time I've seen the artist's rendition of that scripture, it's always usually in a children's book, and it has Jesus in this long white robe, and it has this little girl with a flower in her hair. I want you to think about something different. We don't know who that child was, do we? What about if Jesus took one of those throwaway children? When they were saying, who's the greatest in the kingdom of heaven? Jesus went and took that child, put him on his lap. What about if Jesus went and took one of those throwaway children and no one cared for and said, you welcome this child, you welcome me. Right here in the UK, they're crying. They're crying out. It's only a click away on your websites. You can read their stories. I want us to familiarize ourselves with them today. Because when our heart breaks for them, when we feel the love of Christ and His compassion, we can turn it into action. We need to familiarize. They don't have to be out of sight and out of mind. There's a little boy here. His name's Robert. I'll just read a few of these for you. This is all here in England. It's actually the same birthday as me. He's 7 years old. The social worker writes, he's articulate and likes having his own way, but responds well to firm boundaries. Robert is dealing with a period of transition, and his behavior can be anxious, not knowing where he will live in the future. He very much wants to be a part of a family. Here's a little boy. His name's Alexander. He's 10 months old. Usually, children who are infants get placed quickly. But Alexander has Down syndrome, and so they have a hard time placing him because he's an unwanted child. And I think we can do something about that. Hassan, he's 2 years old, and it says about him, he's been in care since he was 11 months old. His previous foster placement had been going well, but his progress was disrupted quite dramatically after he spent a period of 2 weeks with another family when his foster carer went away. He did not settle back down again, and in the end, his foster care felt that a placement needed to end. So, three different homes. Here's a little girl, Charlotte. She's 1 year old. And this one I find interesting. It says, Charlotte's parents suffer with mental health difficulties, and she needs a family who can accept her parents' illness. When I read that, this tells me something. Her parents, because of whatever mental condition they have, are not able to care for her, but yet they still want to be involved in her life. That's their daughter. They don't want to have their daughter taken away from her. So they need to find somebody, parents, who could come along and take care of her and yet allow the birth parents to be a part of her life. I think that's a wonderful idea. And I think, church, we can do something about that. We can begin to be answers for this generation. Pamela, she's 13 years old, has emotional difficulties stemming from her past life due to the instability of her home life. She is worried about her future and about whom she will end up with. Think about this little girl right now here in England. She's worried where she's going to be. Here's a little boy, Isaac. He's 11 years old. He's in foster care. Isaac is an autistic boy who is extremely likable and energetic and loves sports. He's made precious and valuable and made in the image of God. He should not be an unwanted child to the church. Here's Dean. This is an interesting story. Because I read this story and I think this boy could be the next prisoner. Dean is a friendly child who has had significant attachments in his early life that have broken down. He has managed this by detaching from his caregivers and seems unable to take in love and affection at a deeper level. Dean finds it hardest to trust women and pays more attention to adult men in his life. Dean has lived in several different homes and therefore has adapted to varying times and routines. Think about the life of a child who changes homes. Okay, I brush my teeth before bed in this one. I don't brush my teeth in this one. Okay, we had breakfast in this one. This one I fend for myself. What kind of life are they growing up with? What kind of parents will they turn out to be? He was taken into care originally at a very early age due to rejection from his birth mother who wanted him to be adopted. His father then looked after him for a while, but he was taken into care due to domestic violence and neglect at the age of 4. He has experienced 6 different foster homes, and the concept of permanence is not something that he is emotionally able to understand since it has been so far from his experience of life. We are looking for a family where Dean could be the youngest child with a large age gap between him and the next child up. Dean has in the past shown aggression to children who are younger than him. Sure, he's a problem child, but we have the power of the gospel. There's a little girl. She was born at 39 weeks gestation. They found she's experienced convulsions. She was found to be suffering from a fractured skull and retinal hemorrhaging. So she's in care now, and they write, she found it very difficult to settle in, and she cried and screamed a lot when put down. She wanted to be carried constantly. She's 5 years old. She wanted to be carried constantly or have an adult nearby. She has now settled in, and although she still cries, her carer feels that the length of her crying sessions has been reduced. Laura and Gabrielle, the social workers want to keep them together. They're 2 sisters. They need a 2-parent adoptive family who have parenting experience and understand the implications of safe parenting, and also can help the girls to retain a balanced sense of their Christian background. The adoptive family would also have to be able to help them manage and understand difficult past experiences. Here's a little girl, and I said this. This is a sad story, because this is very common. She's 6 years old. Tina has been looked after by her grandparents for much of her childhood and is well-balanced, sociable 6-year-old who enjoys the attention of adults. Unfortunately, her grandparents are no longer able to care for her due to their age and long-term health problems, and they're seeking a family that she can go live with. This little boy writes himself, and he writes, he's 12 years old, he writes, I'm very excited about going to a permanent placement so I can settle down and feel at home for the rest of my childhood. Here's Edward. He has 7 siblings. None of them are together. Here's a little girl, 1 year old. She has Down syndrome. Janelle needs a loving, caring family who can offer her a secure future. She will need continual sensory stimulation to help her to achieve her potential. It's time to start doing the hard work of the gospel. Here's a little girl, Stephanie. She's 1 year old. They want to keep her together with her sister. Charmaine, this little girl, really broke my heart when I read this. She experienced violence from her father against her mother. The police came in one of his violent rages. She was found huddling behind a door, shaking as he was beating up her mother, and the police took her out of the home. Her foster care, where she's staying now, says, Charmaine is very wary of men. She is now beginning to accept my husband, but will not go to him or ask him for anything. Whenever we meet men, she becomes clingy. Recently, a police car happened to park outside our house, and she became very tense and upset, saying she didn't want them to take her away. You don't have to go to Romania for this. You don't have to go to China. It's right here in the UK, right here in our neighborhoods. Her foster carer writes this at the end, and this is what really got me in my heart. She writes, I found her recently in bed. She's 8 years old. I found her recently in bed with my baby daughter's bottle. She seems to need the comfort she gets from it. Think about that. This little 8-year-old girl here in England, right now, laying in bed, sucking on a baby bottle because that's the only comfort she has in this world. This girl I want to read to you, she's actually from the States, but I want to read this story to you because, you know, if we don't minister to her now, if we don't care for her now, we're going to have to counsel her when she's 16 or when she's 20. So her name's Laura. She's a beautiful and playful child who has brown hair and hazel eyes. Laura is full of life, energy, and curiosity. Laura has a learning disability and lacks social skills, but puts forth a lot of effort. Laura desperately wants to be adopted, but her biggest fear is that she will be a disappointment to the family and they will not keep her. Knowing her painful history will help you understand why she acts the way she does. Laura will need to be in a family with no other children. We can be her answer. I want you to see them. I'm going to pass them out. Please take one and pass it around. Rich, if you can give some to the different aisles. We need to begin to feel their pain if we're ever going to do anything about it. One thing to remember about orphans, I'll use the word foster children and orphans interchangeably. One thing to remember about them, they're not reaping what they have sown. They're reaping what somebody else has sown. They're innocent victims in all of this, but yet they're suffering greatly. They long to see human kindness. They long to see love. But what I've noticed of working with orphan children over 13 years now, that longing for a family, that longing for human kindness, that longing for love is there only for a while. Because as time fades, that longing and that hope starts to get dashed to the ground. And then bitterness starts to set in and resentment. And we wonder why we see them in our prisons. And we wonder why we see them homeless. We wonder why they act the way they do. Hope is lost. The hope of the orphan is the local church. The hope of the orphan is the local church. The bottom line is they need families. You can give them education, counseling, you can give them all these things. They need families. The local church is the place where you find families. Again, as I said, the parachurch ministries cannot do it. Government is not a family. The local church is the hope of the orphan. I want to share a story with you, personal story. I share this with you from our own experience. And I do it for two reasons. One is so you would understand the value of one life. Because unless we can understand the value of one life, we will never help the many. You have to understand the value of one. I also share this story with you, so I want you to understand the power of the gospel. And what God can do through you. I said before, we were living in Romania, my wife and I, church planning and Bible teaching. And one day, as Kurt said, my wife visited, because our church had an outreach to a mental institution for children. This place is a horrific place. A friend of mine describes it as the closest thing to hell he has ever seen. Children are banging their heads against the wall, biting themselves, biting each other, pulling out their hair. It was an awful place. My wife visited that place. And this was her first time there. She just wanted to get out of there. So awful. There's over 300 kids there. She wanted to leave. And on their way out, they stopped by another area where there were three-year-olds. And they were more subdued because they were just transferred there and they were young. And this little girl stood at a distance and just stared at my wife. And my wife went and picked her up and held her and put her back down. Could not get this little girl out of her mind. This little girl is a gypsy girl. Gypsies are looked down upon in Romania. This little girl spent the first 3.5 years of her life rocking in a urine-soaked crib playing with her fingers. That was her life. That was her existence. She didn't know how to talk. She just made noises. She didn't know how to eat. She'd throw food all over herself. And to make a long story short, over a period of a couple of days, the Lord spoke to my wife and I and said, take her into your home. And after a while, the Lord spoke to us again and said, she's your daughter. What value does a 3.5-year-old gypsy girl in Romania who has spent 3.5 years rocking in a crib, nothing to her mind, absolutely nothing to her mind? What value does she have to this world? What value? None. Nothing. They threw her away. Doctors told us, you are crazy to take this girl. She has no value to this world, but she is made in the image of God, precious and valuable to Him. You know, helping her heal has been hard work. It's been exhausting. We had to teach her everything about life. Sometimes we think we're going to take in a child and they're going to so appreciate what we've done to them and they're going to be so thankful, and they may turn around and spit right in our face because their little hearts are not in a position to give back anything to us. They've been hurt. They've been damaged. They've been wounded. We have to give and expect nothing in return. We had to teach her everything. She didn't know how to poop. She would poop in our flat and step in it and walk around our flat. She was never kissed before, so when we kissed her, she would try to kiss us back and she'd bite us. She had fits for hours on end. She used to hit my wife every day. And it was hard work. It was exhausting. It still is. She's 11 now. It's exhausting. But our hearts began to be bound with hers. She was our daughter. We saw her with God's eyes. And one day, we just interacted with her every day. We played with her. We talked to her. We interacted with her every day. And when we would talk to her, no one ever looked her in the eyes before. So when we would look her in the eyes, it was a scary thing. Her eyes would literally go like this. And down like this. She did not want to look us in the eyes because it was intimidating to her. So what we would do is we would put our hands over our eyes and force her, put the other hand over hers and force her to look in our eyes. Because I didn't go to school to, learn how to help children heal. But we have the Word of God that teaches us everything we need to know. And we figured if she's ever going to be better, she needs to be able to develop intimacy with us. She needs to be able to look us in the eye. So we did that every day, every time we talked to her for years, forcing her to look us in the eyes. And now she loves it. Now she absolutely loves it. She comes up to me at times. She'll jump in my lap and she'll say, "Daddy, I want to snuggle." So I'm snuggling with her. And we're just looking in each other's eyes. A number of years ago, I'm looking in her eyes. She's looking in my eyes. And I have all these terms of endearment for her. I call her my special girl. She's my pumpkin. She's my princess. I have all these terms of endearment because children who are hurt need to hear that they're valuable and they need to hear terms of endearment. So I'm giving her all these things. And one day she looks back at me and she wants to say something back to me. Now she looks back at me and she looks in my eyes and she said, "Daddy, you have love eyes." And then she looks, and then she's thinking of the most special thing in the world to her. She looks at me and she said, "Daddy, you have frosting cupcake eyes." I believe one of the reasons God gave us a child in one of the worst conditions imaginable is so I can constantly declare to you that Jesus can heal any life. That the power of this gospel can reach into the heart of the most hurt child and bring out life. That's the potential you have within you. That's Jesus inside of you. She never held a crayon before, so we would give her a crayon. And first time she held the crayon, she picked it up. She was so angry. She picked it up and just smashed it to pieces. So we gave her another one. Picked it up and just smashed the pieces. And then we had to hold her hand. And we had to say, "Look, no. Look what you can do with this." And we held her hand and we drew a picture of a smiley face. I want to show you just a few short years afterwards what she started to draw. This. This is a little girl they said would never be normal. This is a little girl they said is thrown away. A little girl they said would never talk, would never do anything. She drew a picture of my wife. And I can't do that. She drew a picture of a tiger. I think it's pretty good. See, God is healing her. He has healed her. He's bringing out things in her. Just a couple days ago, we watched you remember Popeye? She watched Popeye and then she drew him. And that's Olive. One day she ran up to me and she said, "Daddy, Daddy, I have a present for you." And she gave me this. You want to know how her children are healed? You can give them counseling, you can give them education, you can give them medication, you can give them group therapy, you can give them all these things. The way they're healed is through bonding. They're healed through bonding to an adult, bonding to a parent, someone who says, "You're mine," and that you're safe. That's how they're healed. That's how these children in your hands are going to be healed. One day, I have to tell you this story. My daughter never talked. They said she'd never talk. But the first 2 months with us, she started speaking 20 words. And that was in Romanian. And we didn't even speak Romanian very good. But things started coming out of her. She started talking. But she never said her name before. We tried to get her to say her name. She would never say her name. So 2 months after she was with us, we went back to the mental institution where she was from because we had to ask them if we could keep her further. Believe me, that's a long story. Another day. We had to ask them, "Can we keep her further? Can we keep her some more?" And so she's all dressed up really nice. I have her in a dress. I'm holding her in my arms. I walk into the room. Everybody stops what they're doing. All the staff workers are there. All the children are there. And they look. And you could see in their eyes, they're saying, "Is that Roxana?" And I'm holding her. And a woman, as I'm holding her, the place is quiet. And there's this little boy there like this. He's just sitting there going like this, rocking. And I've learned children need the touch of a human being. If they're not going to get the touch of a human being, they're going to try to stimulate themselves. So he's just there rocking. And my daughter had that rock. She would rock and rock. It was at night, it was especially awful. So we would go up and just put our hands on her back and we'd say in Romanian, "Nu faci așa, nu faci așa. Don't do that. It's okay. It's okay." And she would stop. So here, the place is quiet, completely quiet. I'm holding her, and this boy's rocking. My daughter gets down from my arms, walks over to that boy, puts her hand on his back in front of everybody, and says, "Nu faci așa."
Wow.
Then she gets up back in my arms. And then a staff worker came over, and now the place is completely quiet. This woman comes over, and she was kind of arrogant. And she said to my daughter, she wanted to test her. "Okay, you're healed. Let's see." She said, "Cum te chiama? What's your name?" Now, I was getting angry inside because she knew my daughter didn't speak. It's only been 2 months. She knew. And for the last 2 months, we tried to get her to say her name, Roxana. Roxana, I'm getting angry. You have some nerve embarrassing this little girl in front of everybody. My daughter looks her right in the eye, emphatically and clearly, for the first time in her life, said, "Roxana." You know, chills went down my spine that day because I knew from that moment on she wanted to live life. And we had the privilege of giving her the opportunity. These children in your hands want to live life. And you have the privilege, church, of giving them the opportunity. We never saw her as a mental patient. We never saw her as an orphan child. We saw her as one made precious and valuable and made in God's image. You know, if we're ever going to help anyone in Mercy Ministries, we've got to get past all the labels. We've got to get past them. At that time, God told me, "Shut it all down. I don't want you preaching. I want you just to be a father to this girl who never had one before." And I did. For a long time, I did. And I thought in that time, if I never did anything else in my life, but be a father to this little girl, my life would have been worth it. Because that's the value that she has to God. It's an awesome privilege to pour out your life for somebody else. And I believe the next revival we need in the church is a revival of sacrifice.
Yes.
It's a revival of relevance. It's a revival where local churches become relevant to the needs of the destitute and vulnerable, and where we pour out our lives for them, no matter what the cost. My wife said it would only be 2 days. Mind if I bring a baby home for 2 days? Since then, we went back and got her brother and sister. You know, that wasn't a complicated decision. It wasn't an amazing thing. Listen, I just figured if my brother and sister were in an orphanage, I'd want my parents to go get them. We don't have to make this so complicated. I didn't have to so much hear God on that. It made sense. Church, let's do it. Let's do these things. The local church has unlimited potential. I am so excited about this meeting. I'm so excited for you. Because when I look at you, all I see is potential. All I see is potential of what God can explode through this church.
Amen.
For this world, for the good of this world. We have the testimony. When we look at orphan children, we have the testimony of church history behind us. See, the early church cared for orphan children. The churches throughout the centuries cared for orphan children. Sometimes we want the revival of the early church. We pray for it. The question really is, are we willing to make the sacrifice the early church made? Because I believe if we're willing to make the sacrifice the early church made, we're going to see the revival of the early church. Something was happening in the early church. Some of you are probably familiar with the exposure of the infants that happened in Greek and Roman times. It was sanctioned by law, promoted by philosophers. If any parent had full legal authority over their child, if they did not want that child for any reason, they had the right to kill that child. So babies, toddlers, were being abandoned on the sides of roads. And the elements would kill them. Some were died by drowning, other means. That was sanctioned by Greek and Roman law in effect for hundreds of years. The early church was born into this environment. James writes a letter. James chapter 1, verse 27. You're probably familiar with it. True religion is to care for orphans and widows in their distress. That wasn't just poetic words. There was something going on. What did they do? They responded. They responded with action. They responded with a plan. And the early church set out to rescue those children. They brought them into their own homes and rescued who knows how many thousands and thousands of children the early church rescued. Christian leaders, you can go back and read the writings of Christian leaders of the time, the first few hundred years. They wrote against the awful practice of exposure and also abortion. They wrote against it. They intelligently wrote against it. In a matter of a few hundred years, that law that was in effect in concrete for those years was overturned. It was overturned because of one thing. From now on, exposure of the infants, exposure of the toddlers is illegal. You will be punished. What changed that law? One thing. It was called Christianity. Christianity. And it wasn't changed by what they said so much. It was changed by what they did. Because they didn't just say, that child has value that they're throwing away. They said, that child has value and we'll take that child into my home. My friends, if we want our voice to count, if we want the credibility to speak and say abortion is wrong, if we want the credibility to say anything else, we have to have action behind our words. The early church gives us that example. There's also I've seen a modern day example, and there's plenty of them around the world. Unfortunately, most of them are in developing nations. In the Western world, we've forgotten the orphan. But in the country of Romania, where I lived, do you remember in the early 90s, how many remember the BBC exposure of the Romanian institutions? Many of you do. CNN. It was all over the news. Many people from here went there and adopted babies. Many people from the U.S. went there to rescue children. We did that. There was another side to that story that the news doesn't report. Because you get this idea that the Romanians didn't care at all about their children. I was in Romania. I saw the church. I saw this one church that we work with. They got on their knees. They said, God, we have nothing. We barely have a light bulb in our house. But they began to fast. They began to pray. They began to say, God, use us. We care about these kids. In the last 13 years, they have rescued over 100 children.
Wow.
This little tiny church. What God can do through His church. What God can do through His people when we humble ourselves. Say, God, use us. Use us. I believe, in regards to this issue, the time is critical. The government is looking for somebody. Somebody. Anybody who will help. because they have all these unwanted children on their hands. I believe it's a critical time. This could either be our finest hour, or this could be our greatest failure. It will be our greatest failure if we choose to do nothing. If we choose to walk on the other side of the road and ignore the cry of the orphan. I'm afraid if we do that, the church will slip into further irrelevancy and possible obscurity. However, this could be our finest hour. This could be our finest hour. We have Jesus taught us how to walk in this world. He taught us how to have compassion. He taught us how to lay down our lives. It could be our finest hour. If we allow our hearts to be moved by His compassion, if we as local, this is the day of the local church. It's no longer the day, thank God for the Salvation Army, thank God for others, and now it's the local church's turn.
Yes.
It's the local church's turn.
Yes.
It's the day to say, God, it's our turn. We're here. We're here.
Yes.
We're here. And we humbly just say, we're here, God. We're here. We'll help. We're committed. And we work to rescue. I believe we need to begin to restore these ministries to the church. Sometimes we preach and we allow the goodness of people just to go about, and that's good. We need to do that. But there's something powerful when we can collectively come together as a church and say, we are determined as a church to face this issue and to bring God's solution to it. We work to rescue these children. Who knows what they will turn out to be, these children in your hands. Some of them could be future leaders of this church. Some of them could be missionaries that will go to another land. Most of them will be wonderful moms and dads because they learned how to be a mom and dad from you. I believe this could be our finest hour. And I believe as we sacrifice ourselves, we sacrifice everything we have, we'll see an outpouring of God.
Yes.
And His Spirit. I want to close. Pastor, I'll give it back to you after. I want to close with showing you something. Well, let me say one thing before I do. If you want to know what to do for the orphan child, those foster children, we only have to ask ourselves one question. If I were that child, what would I want the church to do for me? That's what we need to do for them. This I want to show you. My wife is, she likes photography. She was taking a photography class. And one day the teacher gave her the assignment to take a picture of hands. And she decided to take a picture of my hand and my daughter Roxana's hand. When I saw this picture, I was absolutely amazed. She wrote a scripture on it, "Yet I am always with you. You hold me by my right hand." This, I want to show it to you. Look at my daughter's hand. This is a hand that was once so lost, once so angry, once so alone, once so confused. Do you see how her hand is resting in mine? You know why? Because she knows that Daddy's got her. She knows she's safe. She knows she's secure. She no longer has to survive on her own. She's safe. All those stories you have there, there are hands right now waiting for the church to rise up and say, we'll be a hand. We'll be a hand that will come along and keep you safe, keep you secure. My, what God can do through you. God can do extraordinary things through you. Now, it's not going to be an altar call here. I think we have to commit ourselves. We have to commit ourselves to something substantial. Let's just have a time of silence. Time of silence. Let's all of us close our eyes. Just have a time of silence before the Lord. Meet with the Lord. Just meet with Him. Let's ask God to whatever's on your heart. If it's compassion you need again, things that are standing in your way, maybe it's some sin. I'll tell you, you never feel the compassion and love of God flowing through you if there's sin in your life. This is your time to lay it down. Lay it down. Lay it all down. Maybe it's your possessions. You're not going to take it with you. Give it to Jesus now and say, God, use me. Use me. Maybe it's distractions. You're distracted by life. I think God is calling us back to something substantial. Commit to God right now to put away the distractions so that you could do His work. So that you could be His hands extended into this world. So that you could say, God, not my will be done, but your will be done. Your kingdom come. Your will be done on earth. Not mine, God. Yours. My friends, this church as a united body with the love of Christ can do extraordinary things. But it happens as individuals lay down their lives and say, God, use me. I'm here, God. Use me. The day of saying it's not my ministry is over. It's over. From now on, we should say, God, put your compassion and love in my heart for all men and lead me to who you want me to touch. Let's pray. Just have a time of silence.